Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's bet.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in, Doug Kazarian here. We have a loaded Behind the Bets podcast coming up as we tape this on Wednesday, December 12th. Phil Steele back off a one-week hiatus to break down Saturday's bowl games. He's got a couple plays. I believe we have five bowl games. Is that right, Kai?
I believe so, yeah.
Five Saturday. On Saturday as the bowl season gets underway, including the Las Vegas Bowl. Phil has a pick there. So he'll wrap up. So we'll do college at the end of this podcast. John Murray, as he always does, will join us. And we have an update in the Bonanza. I've extended my league lead. Monster play on the Giants via Twitter. So we'll recap that. And I have an even bigger one this week in the Bonanza with a team that you'd be surprised is favored, let alone laying a full 7 points. But I'm backing them in a big way. We'll get to that. Mike Clay will play a little speed round. He will talk nerdy to us in a very aggressive way, in a very speedy way. So Mike Clay is going to have 5 minutes of props as he continues his red hot play on Thursday night game. So look, holiday season, bunch of college and pro football on Saturday, and we'll get to it with John Murray, Mike Clay, and Phil Steele.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Kicking is for losers.
He's back, John Murray, Mr. Director. How are you?
Good, man. Good to be back.
I like the added kicking is for losers. You know, we're adjusting on the fly here.
Kicking is for losers. Ask Bill Belichick.
So I wanted to ask you that because I was sitting there in a SportsCenter room watching it with everyone, and I said, you know, you can make an argument for going for it here.
And make an argument for going? I thought it was an absolute lock. I thought it was a complete no-brainer they should have gone for it.
Okay, so let's pump the brakes on using what happened in terms of the Miami Miracle as evidence. You're telling me making it a five-point game,
yeah,
and still having that little time, like with 2 minutes ago, because we talked about this scenario very similar with the opening night game on Sunday night, Bears and Packers, where I agreed with you that the Bears could have gone for the first down and iced the game. But with just so few seconds left, no timeouts, I think the right move was to go for the field goal.
Obviously, that play was one in a million, but the only way Miami would even have a chance is if they could get off of their goal line, which they did after New England had a kickoff. If they don't get the touchdown there on fourth and goal at the four, then Miami's backed up at their own four. I thought it was a no-brainer.
Right, but then they only need a field goal, right? So, but here they had the ball at the 31.
How are they going to get from the 4 yard line into field goal range with no timeouts and 16 seconds?
Well, the same way they got from the 31 yard line to the end zone. A Miami miracle.
But if they tackle him in bounds there, the game's over because they're not going to be able to get their field goal unit onto the field.
But maybe Kenyon Drake gets the angle, you know, from somebody else and takes it 50 yard. Whatever. I'm just saying it was equally a ridiculous play. I mean, it would have required a ridiculous play both ways. I don't know if
true.
I don't think going for it was the right move. I really don't. I don't. But I understand.
I definitely disagree. I think it was clearly the right thing to do there. And worse, like 50-50 chance probably they score the touchdown. The game is over.
Right.
The other 50% chance, Miami's at their own 4 yard line with 16 seconds left and no timeouts. Obviously, it took a miracle either way. I'm not saying that. I'm not trying to just be a prisoner of the moment. I was saying this before they kicked the field goal.
By the way, you said you're doing well. Your voice is not, though.
Yeah, I think I've been doing too many interviews, guys. I can barely talk. I feel like, remember that episode of Seinfeld when Jerry had a sore throat and he kind of had to like force his way through the episode? The famous original raise? It's just original. Yeah, that's how I feel right now.
Well, I sympathize with you, man. I've been there throughout my career, so we will try to be economy of words, if you will. So we're going to be very delicate with Mr. Director's words.
Please. I'm a sort of a delicate genius, so please be careful here.
You know who's not a delicate genius? Mark Sanchez.
No, Mark Sanchez, he struggled a little bit on Sunday. That was a tough outing for Mark.
Two first downs for the Redskins offense in the first half. I thought he knew the system. What happened there?
Yeah, I mean, he can know the system, but the guy just can't play at all. I mean, the Redskins are, when you lose your number one and number two quarterbacks to broken legs, your season is over. And the Redskins, of course, at this point, they're much better off losing than winning anyway, so it's fine.
Now, we thought the Giants season was over. Now, Kai's sitting here.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Kai's thinking playoffs now.
No. I'm not thinking playoffs. But, I mean, it feels good to win, especially after last season when you went 3-13.
Yeah. But you know what? The Giants, I think the worst thing they could do, Kai, is not lower their draft pick. The worst thing they could do is talk themselves into giving Eli Manning another season as their starting quarterback.
Oh.
That's what I'd be concerned about if I was a Giants fan. I'd be worried about that.
Yeah, that was just special.
Well,
you don't want to see Eli under center for another year.
You know, Murray, everyone has their sort of own approach to handicapping and betting. I'm a feel guy often, and it kind of just – sometimes it just comes to me. So right before kickoff, I tweeted you a pick on the Giants. I said, you know what? The Redskins aren't going to be better than they were Monday night. It's not like Mark Sanchez got better and learned 90% of the playbook in a few days. So I wish I sniffed that out earlier, but that happened. So a big move for yours truly in the Bonanza.
Yeah, that was a good pick. I only had one play last week. I got screwed for the millionth time in the NFL. Eagles plus 3.5.
Yeah.
The tipped pass. This is why I don't bet on the NFL. The tipped pass touchdown on third down there for Amari Cooper. That was awesome.
Yeah, and then not to mention the offensive pass interference, not to mention other ridiculous stuff in the game like the opening kickoff.
I thought that was the worst call of the year in the NFL, that Dallas Goedert. I mean, it was basically offensive pass interference because he was too big and too fast for Jeff Heath to control him. Mm-hmm. So they called offensive pass interference. And then everyone's like, oh, they gave him a makeup call on the roughing the passer penalty on Randy Gregory, and that was a makeup call. But there's no such thing as a makeup call that gets you even when they wipe out a 70-yard touchdown.
Fact.
I mean, they can give you 15 yards, but it's not going to make up for wiping out a 70-yard touchdown for no reason whatsoever.
How'd the books do on that game?
We didn't do well. Actually, you know what? We did better than we would have if it had landed 3, because we had a guy that had a big bet on plus 3.5, and we actually had a guy that had a big money line parlay that closed with Dallas. So we were better off them scoring the touchdown there and winning by 6, but it wasn't a good result for the books. Everybody was on Dallas, as you guys can imagine.
But it was a good result for the books elsewhere. You guys, I mean, we mentioned the Miami Miracle. That's huge, right? Money line parlays, teasers all wiped out in that early slot.
Yeah, it was big. It was very big. I mean, it's hard to say exactly how much because I do think that a lot of those money line parlays would have lost anyways when the Steelers lost to the Raiders. But it was certainly good for us there. And there are some other games that we did very well on. The biggest game of the week for sure, though, was the Raiders winning outright against the Steelers. They covered the second half. There was a ton of money on the Steelers game, Steelers second half.
What a strange story that Big Ben – that they were having trouble with the X-ray machine in Oakland. Maybe John Gruden traded the starting X-ray machine out. That's why they were having problems. I made that joke on SportsCenter. I was very proud of myself.
Nice.
But, yeah, like they couldn't get the X-ray results in time, so Big Ben missed like a quarter to a half.
And, you know, I don't know what that the end of the game was ridiculous, that Chris Boswell field goal where he slipped on that field in Oakland. You can see why that stadium needs to be put down, Doug. It's over.
Yeah, euthanize it.
Just let it go, man. I mean, you can see why the Raiders are moving out here to Las Vegas.
Well, there's a lawsuit now, so who knows what's going on with the very latest.
Yeah, a lot of speculation here where the Raiders will play in 2019. The stadium here in Las Vegas won't be ready until 2020. So there's a lot of talk about where they'll play. I think if I had to bet on one location, I'd probably say San Diego. I think makes the most sense, but we'll see.
We're not going to get Sam Boyd Stadium for a year?
I don't think so, man. Have you ever, you've been to Sam Boyd Stadium, I'm sure.
Hey, Las Vegas Locos won a title there.
Yeah, well, I don't know that they can have NFL games there, but I think San Diego is the most likely outcome.
Yeah, that would make sense. That would make sense. Really strange kind of musical chairs with the California football teams going on there.
Yeah.
So that was big. Monday night, I'm very disappointed. I teased it on the Bonanza. I did not do it. I kind of forgot to do it on the Bonanza because I had so much invested in it on my own. And also, I gave it out on SportsCenter and my column. I thought I had checked all the boxes. But the Seahawks took care of business yet again. Kirk Cousins struggles in a high-profile game against a winning team with a winning record.
Yeah, and then they scapegoated the offensive coordinator and fired him yesterday, which I thought was a little silly. But, you know, Minnesota looks like they're still going to get into the postseason just because you've got these other NFC teams falling apart around them, and they look like they'll be favored in each of their last three games.
So you guys have that huge bet, right, from the beginning of the season you told us right here on the podcast?
Yeah. Yeah, $240,000 to win $120,000 on Minnesota to make the playoffs at minus 200.
So you guys did yes-no of every team. So Seattle in the driver's seat for a wild card bid, and then it's essentially three teams for one spot, Vikings, Panthers, Eagles, and I guess the Packers, maybe four teams.
Well, and look at the Eagles and the Panthers this week. They're both big underdogs. The Redskins are actually at 6-7-2, but we don't count them. They don't have any chance. Minnesota, a 7-point favorite this week. They're going to be favored next week at Detroit, and they should be a decent favorite in week 17. They play at home against the Bears, but my guess is by then the Bears will have locked up their playoff seeding. The Bears will be either the 3 or 4 seed in the NFC playoffs. Possibility that if the Bears are the 3 seed, that they could be looking at playing Minnesota again the following week in a wild card game. So you would expect them to sit everybody and show the Minnesota's coaching staff nothing in a game like that. Minnesota would likely be a big favorite.
It really is remarkable that they made the OC the scapegoat, but I think he's had some issues too. They haven't used Dalvin Cook enough. Not like Kirk Cousins played well, but Kirk Cousins also missed guys wide open, like Thielen in the end zone a couple times.
Yeah, and Minnesota, don't forget about this play, guys. Down 6-0 with less than 6 minutes left in the game on 4th and 9, they kicked a field goal to cut it to 3. Kick was blocked. Game was over right there. You got to go for that one. They correctly went for it down inside, I think inside the 5-yard line on the previous possession.
Yes.
Did not get the touchdown. They should have gone for it again. They kicked a field goal, game over.
Well, they also got a penalty that wasn't called. I mean, it was called, and then the flag was picked up. I don't understand what happened there. That should have been 15 yards.
I can't disagree with that.
I'm very
confused. I just disagree with the field goal. I disagree with the field goal, but I agree with you on that.
Yeah, I'm indifferent on the field goal there. If it were 7, because like they'd still need a touchdown after the field, then obviously you go for it. But because it was 6, and it's not like Seattle's defense. I mean, remember, there hadn't been a touchdown at that point. Seattle's defense hadn't – their offense hadn't done much in terms of the second half. Obviously, they moved the ball in the first half and had some weird things happen. I don't know. 4th and 9, I'm in that sort of no man's land right there.
Seattle playing very well right now, and if they win on Sunday, they do clinch a playoff berth. Very likely that they're going to be the number 5 seed in the NFC playoffs, potentially a first-round matchup with the Dallas Cowboys.
Ooh, Cowboys would get home field, though.
Yeah, I'd be in Dallas, as the NFC East winner.
Okay, so let's look ahead to this week. We have a expanded schedule with Saturday games, but we start Thursday. Chiefs-Chargers. I liked Kansas City last week. Almost got the push at 6 when Travis Kelce nearly scored a touchdown in overtime, because this Kansas City team now has 4 losses against the spread. Previously only had 3, and they were 14, 10, like they're a big number, 16, and then 8.5. So the one score possessions in terms of the point spread they tend to cover as a favorite did not this weekend against the Ravens, thanks to Patrick Mahomes' miraculous plays on 4th down. And the Chiefs limping into this one a little bit. Tyreek Hill's hurt. Obviously, no Kareem Hunt for Kansas City. But what kind of effort and performance do we expect from a short week by the Chargers?
I don't even understand how Patrick Mahomes makes some of these throws, guys. That guy, like, is he the most talented player we've ever seen play the quarterback position in the NFL? I don't even know how he does some of this stuff.
Yeah.
The kid isn't
maybe.
is just unbelievable. You know this, Doug. The sharp players love to back Phillip Rivers as a road underdog. So there's going to be plenty of support for the Chargers. There's plenty of support for Kansas City as well. This is a very evenly bet game so far. Be a lot of money on the over would be my guess. We'll probably end up needing the under in this game. But I could definitely see this one going either way. I think the Chargers have as much talent as any team in the NFL, but I'm not exactly ready to get in front of Patrick Mahomes again. The guy's incredible.
I'm going to write a piece for ESPN.com, chalk page, on the MVP betting. And I know Nevada Gaming did not offer it this year, but New Jersey and offshore markets did. And after last weekend, Patrick Mahomes took over the MVP race, if you will, according to the odds market. But the Chargers, if they win this game, Rivers at like 22-1 is probably worth a bet going into the game as a 3.5-point dog. I wonder if he becomes almost the co-favorite. Almost, I said. So maybe like a 5-1 and Mahomes goes to like 2-1 if the Chargers get the W here.
It's possible, but I think that Patrick Mahomes has done enough. I think he should be the NFL MVP. The only other guy I'd consider is Drew Brees, but
Brees was the favorite up until the last couple of weeks, so.
Yeah, and Brees, you know, sometimes these MVP awards are career awards, career achievement awards. Mm-hmm. Drew Brees has never won the NFL MVP, so I wouldn't be surprised if he gets some votes for that.
Well, I don't know what to think after the Heisman now, because I thought this thing was locked up. And
Yeah, I didn't think it was. I thought it was the wrong decision, personally. I thought that Tua should have been the Heisman Trophy winner. It was good for the book here at the Superbook, so I'm not complaining, but I don't know how you can. The only way you could give it to Kyler Murray, in my opinion, is if you didn't watch any of the games and you just looked at their two stats next to each other at the end of the season and said, okay, give me this guy. Because Tua could have put up even better numbers than Kyler if he had needed to. He just didn't need to because his team was ahead by so much every week.
Well, and to your point, the award is not the MVP, right? And I said on this very podcast a couple months ago that Murray, Herbert, some of these other guys could, you know, the line wouldn't move if they replaced Tua in the starting lineup because Alabama's so good, but that's not what the award is. And if you played this season in inverse order, right? Let's say Alabama opened against Georgia and then ended the season with Louisville and played the game and all the results, Tua might have been unanimous. Like, that's how he started the year, 25 touchdowns, no picks in the first eight games. And that was playing limited. Like, he was flawless. But again, I understand Murray. He was dynamic. He was a great player. You know, I don't necessarily blame anyone for voting for him just because he was so great. But I think people saying, oh, what was Tua's Heisman moment? Like, that's stupid. He was the most outstanding player in college football.
He definitely was. And what they're telling you with that vote is that all they're looking at is just the statistics. And I don't see how anybody other than a quarterback.
In the last couple
weeks. Yeah, that's true. But I do think one takeaway Ed Sammons and I have talked about is no one is going to win this thing again that's not a quarterback. And we'll remember that next year when we do the Heisman odds for 2019.
Maybe. I mean, Derrick Henry won it over Deshaun Watson. Right? Deshaun Watson had some great years.
I don't remember the numbers that year, but it's just the way it is now with these offenses, it's just hard to believe that a non-quarterback could win. It's probably just going to keep being Big 12 quarterbacks playing against those defenses in the Big 12. You got to give them a good long, hard look. Whoever the Oklahoma quarterback is next year, I'll go out on a limb and say he's probably going to put up some pretty big numbers in Lincoln Riley's offense.
I would agree with you there. Let's keep it going for the NFL. In terms of Saturday games, what do you think the line move is going to be for this Houston Jets game and the Cleveland-Denver game?
You know, we took a big bet on the Texans already. We had a guy bet the Texans minus 260 on the money line. Mm. He bet that to win 50,000, 130 to win 50.
Oh, my God.
I think the Texans number will probably go up as we get closer to kickoff. You got to think that the Texans will be included in a lot of money line parlays and teasers. They need this win after a bad loss last week. The Cleveland-Denver game, I think the money's actually going to come in on Cleveland here, guys. I think, if anything, I think this number might actually go down. I'm not going to pick Cleveland this week, though.
No?
You know, so this is kind of a funny story. I was on set with Brent Musburger yesterday, and before I did the show with Brent, I was on with Sam Panionovich and Jonathan Von Tobel. I'm sure you know those guys from VSiN.
Windy
City, Sammy, and JVT. JVT is a loyal listener to this podcast, by the way.
I know.
So shout out to him.
I know. Big NBA guy, too. He's in my heart.
So I was telling them on our show how I wanted to give Brent the Browns last week, but I was afraid that if I did, he was just going to be like, is this kid seriously giving me the Browns again? and he would get mad at me. So I gave him the Bears, which luckily that won too. But after the Browns game on Sunday morning, I was kicking myself for not giving Mr. Musburger the Browns. And I was telling the story on the air. So Brent shows up for his show, and he asked me to sit down on his show. So on the air, he confronts me. He's like, I was driving in here. I listened to you on with JVT and Sam. And I was like, Brent's like, just give me whatever pick you like. Don't worry about that. And he let me know that he actually picked the Browns on his own.
Ooh.
And he won that one too. Brent went 4-1 last week in the Super Contest. He's in the money right now. So definitely the pressure is on to deliver a winner for him each week. But I thought that was funny that he was listening to the show on his drive in and confronted me about being afraid to give him the Browns again.
Well, that dilemma that you faced last weekend is something we all do in the media that have to give picks. You are a member of us as well. Just it is a total mind game, mind blank with yourself when you have to factor in all these stuff. And it's really, you overthink it. You talk yourself out of place. And sometimes you just get, like, sloppy, too. Like, sometimes you just forget. Like, I was talking how I forgot to do Seattle in the Bonanza. So it's complicated. It's not as easy as it looks. There's pressure. We talk about these field goal kickers choking. Hey, sometimes we choke, too. Sometimes we're in our own head. I'm paralysis by analysis all the time. So I feel that pain.
Well, you could argue that I choked when I didn't give them the Browns, because I did like the Browns the most. But luckily, I got away with it because the Bears won, too.
I would say so you choked in the Bonanza, though. You didn't give out the Browns or the Bears in the Bonanza.
Yeah. No, I really did like the Eagles. I thought the Eagles was a good pick.
Well, you were ahead of the line move, too.
Yeah, close three. I thought +3.5, just because if you remember that Sunday night game a few weeks ago, the Eagles were like a 7-point favorite at home against Dallas. So I thought +3.5 was a huge overreaction. Probably should have covered, but it did not.
No, it did not, and it is... I think that 7 was a bad line looking back.
If you think
about it, though, just the Eagles are not that good. And we saw that in New Orleans, and we've seen it all year. They've been shaky at best. I think they have the worst ATS at home this season, or at least they did going into the Monday night game against Washington. But they're just not quite there. They have obviously a bunch of injuries on defense. I love the Rams this weekend. And then the line's going to move because of the Carson Wentz news, and you guys have it off the board, and I'm really upset because I loved the Rams -9.5 off that embarrassing loss in Chicago.
You know, the Eagles really have been a disappointment, and I think one of the biggest problems for the Eagles is they tried to just keep the whole gang together after the Super Bowl season last year. You've got to always be moving forward in professional sports in the NFL. You can't just bring back the same exact team. You've got to always be moving forward. And they lost Frank Reich. Don't forget about that. Losing Frank Reich.
Yeah, they didn't keep the guys
OC
together.
Last
That's
year.
One thing they did not do
well,
with coaching
I'm
staff.
Talking about in terms
no,
of
I know,
player
I know.
Personnel.
That hurt them.
But they lost Frank Reich, and Frank Reich now in Indianapolis doing a terrific job with the Colts. But it's still, even having said that, it's shocking that they could go from 13 wins and a Super Bowl championship to potentially not even making it to the postseason. It's really remarkable.
Well, and that's something I've said a lot on this podcast, is Adrian Peterson ruined it for everyone. Carson Wentz blew out his knee in December, okay? Peterson came back and was all world. Nobody is that. Look, so Deshaun Watson hurt his knee early in the season. It took him a month or so to get back, and I don't even know if he's 100%, but at least he's playing much better than he was that first month of the season. Well, look at Wentz. That's 2 months later, 3 months later that he blew out his knee, and his recovery's not the same either. I mean, Wentz had an ACL and an MCL, right?
Yeah, it was about this exact week. They played at the Rams. I think it was week 14, if I remember correctly. So it's been about a year since they were playing on the road against the Rams, and Wentz blew out his knee. He blew out the whole thing, I think. We probably won't see the Carson Wentz we saw last season until the 2019 season.
I mean, let's just put it this way. If the NFL like somehow started in like March, would Wentz have been playing like full contact in September and October? Like, no.
No.
But they came back because the season required it. That doesn't mean he's 100%. And then you start, you know, he's got the knee brace, then you start favoring it and maybe other injuries. Like, it's just all, he's just not 100% all season. And that's the large reason for the drop-off.
No, he's not. And they've also had a lot of injuries in their secondary. But it's still a pretty big surprise to me that, you know, they're essentially life and death right now to make it to the postseason. it's not like the NFC East is some great division.
Well, they blew some games, like Carolina, right? I mean, they've blown some costly games. By the way, I forgot to mention it earlier. I am scared how much I love this NFL card. I usually only like one or two games. I like about seven games this week. A lot.
Seven games. Oh, my God.
So we might go up in smoke in the Bonanza.
Fire up Bonanza, yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna make one $500 bet and just sit and watch.
Well, I did. I talked to the Prince of Props this morning before I came into work. He gave me a play. I don't think I'm going to give anything else, though. I think I'll just go with the Prince. And we're recording this. I have about 5 hours to somehow come up with something for Brent Musburger. I got nothing, boys. I'm very, very concerned.
Well, how about maybe this podcast will produce something? Maybe you'll like what you hear throughout the course of the rest of this podcast.
I'm 8-6 for Musburger, so that's I'm very pleased with that number. If I could go 2-3 or 2-1 the last 3 weeks here, wrap up 10-7, I'll gladly take that for the year.
Oh yeah, I think you should gladly take 9-8. That's a point yeah, 2%. I mean, that's 0.2 net profit.
It's a static number, but I make the pick on the show right as we release the numbers. So I don't get to play into the advantage of picking into a static line because I'm picking it as soon as we announce them.
That's a great point. It's fair.
So all it's right, really not so, a static line for me.
So let's go to a game I absolutely adore.
Please.
Give me the Cincinnati Bengals -3 against the Oakland Raiders.
Doug, I don't know if you're aware of this, and Kai, double-check me on this, but I think Cincinnati added Hugh Jackson to their coaching staff. you might want to double-check. Is that true, Kai? I don't know if
you have that as a stay away?
You know that since Hugh Jackson joined the Bengals, they've lost every game, and Cleveland has actually passed them in the standings?
Compelling.
I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that. No, I mean, I make my Hugh Jackson jokes. Cincinnati's season has fallen apart because of all their injuries, most notably Andy Dalton, and A.J. Green is their best player. So the Bengals are just a complete mess right now.
Well, the Oakland Raiders, not exactly world beaters off a win.
No. They're not.
They have three wins this year. They're 0-2 against the spread after the previous two. I just think they're a mess, and I don't trust them to win to cover three straight.
How about Gruden celebrating after the win over Pittsburgh, holding up the three fingers for their third win of the year? He knows that it was week 14 when they picked up that third win, right?
Exactly. It wasn't week 5.
Yeah, I don't think that's something to really be bragging about, that they picked up their third win on, what was that, December 10th, December 9th?
By the way, the NFL could learn something from the NBA, right? It's called tanking, right? You have the Niners winning. You have the Raiders winning. What on earth is going on with these teams that could be helping their draft pick?
Yeah, Matt Eumanns of VSiN fame, he said he thought Gruden was holding up three fingers because they had dropped to the third draft choice.
I was just about to say that myself.
By winning that game. Yeah, I agree with you. You know how I feel about, I mean, I always say this about every sport. If you have no chance to win the championship, you might as well just go to the bottom of the league. And that's why I get so frustrated with the Redskins just staying in this mediocre mid-range 7-9, 8-8 every year for 20 years. It's just stupid. You're never going to get any better.
Jeff Driscoll looked okay and competent. I thought they would. That was a nice cover. That was a game I kind of liked, too. I should have gone with that as well. +14 was just too much, given the Chargers' look-ahead spot.
It was a really big look-ahead spot for the Chargers. And do we really trust Anthony Lynn to cover a 2-touchdown spread? I guess not.
And off the big win, too. Off the big win. It was a sandwich.
Yeah, off a huge win. A huge win. It was a classic sandwich spot. You're absolutely right.
But hindsight's 20/20. I did not do it, so I can't exactly say I was too strong there. So what sharp bets have you taken so far this week?
In the NFL, nothing really too. I mean, there's a lot of money in there on the New York Football Giants, Kai's New York Giants.
Oh yeah,
Kai laid 2.5 on that game.
Kai's still happy, even though he knows it's counterproductive.
We moved that one to -2.5, -120. And there's always support, like I mentioned earlier, the Chargers is a road dog. That's always something you're going to see support for. Been some money on Carolina, too. Carolina, the guy took +6.5. They're down to +6. That's the Monday night game against New Orleans. You know, New Orleans has looked pretty vulnerable the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
The wheels have totally come off of Carolina. So I think that's kind of a hard game to pick. But that is a pretty high line to be – the Saints to be laying 6.5 on the road with Carolina still needing to win a couple of games to potentially get into the playoffs.
You want to know what else I love?
The Saints.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought it was a good segue. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, that's fair. I got nothing on those games you mentioned.
Okay.
I'm scared how much I like the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Really? Against the Reds? You know, we were just talking about that game before I called in. I think the Redskins are going to be a team that just sees no support this week in the betting market from the public just because they looked so bad on Sunday. But, you know, I don't know that Jacksonville really is a team that should be laying 7 points in an NFL game.
They should. You're right. They should be laying more.
Really? Yeah. I mean, the Redskins season is obviously over. They've got nothing. They've got nothing left without both of those quarterbacks out. So I can't disagree with that.
Two first downs in the first half. How are they going to block anyone on that Jags defense?
Yeah, and they've got a lot of injuries on their offensive line in addition to the injuries to both of their quarterbacks. I feel like the Redskins have injuries every year. They might want to put their training staff under some sort of a microscope because every season it seems like they're just riddled with injuries.
And I think the Jags have an edge to them. So they got embarrassed. And they 10 days off. And when that happens, teams do bounce back. I think it's just going to be a complete bloodbath. I really think Jacksonville with Kessler is so much better than Bortles. I just think they're going to it's going to be like 27-3 or something, just one of those games.
That seems like a game that I'm not going to watch on Sunday morning. Yeah. There's a ton of 10 a.m. games this week. There's only two games in the afternoon, I think.
Correct.
So there's a lot.
I like one of those games as well.
Well, go ahead. I can't wait.
Well, I'm going to get to that. I got another 10 a.m. game. I got another beatdown game. I like the Atlanta Falcons laying the big number.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Atlanta to me is a team that is just so bad. I mean, they have to move on from Steve Sarkisian. It's crazy that their offense is not playing well with all the playmakers they have offensively. I know they've been banged up on defense, but what's the excuse for that offense with all those stud players they have?
Yeah, 5 straight games scoring 20 or less. They've lost 5 straight, and they're laying 9.5.
It's hard to imagine anyone doing a worse job as the offensive coordinator there than Sarkisian has done. It's not like he doesn't have the horses there. It's not like he's the Buffalo Bills or the New York Jets in terms of playmakers.
Right.
The Falcons have plenty of playmakers, and I think you've got to put the blame on Sarkisian.
I don't blame you there. I don't blame you there, but I still want to lay the points. 8.5, 9. So
not much faith in Josh Rosen, I take it.
Arizona's just got issues. I don't have.
You know, this is a good rookie quarterback class. I don't think it's getting enough credit. You know, Baker Mayfield looks great. I think Josh Allen has made some real strides. Sam Darnold showed some flashes. Lamar Jackson's been playing well for the Ravens. A very good rookie quarterback class this season.
I agree. And you and I were texting the other night about a coworker of mine had a great point. He's like, not one single scout, draft expert, you name it, mentioned Josh Allen's ability to run the ball and scramble. And the guy is over 100 yards rushing seemingly every week.
Yeah. You know, we were talking about Josh Allen on Sunday here at the book. If Josh Allen was in the 2019 draft, he'd be a slam dunk to be the first overall pick in that draft. Because the quarterbacks next year are not very good. Allen, 22 years old, he's got a rocket for an arm, he's got prototypical size, and he's running for 100 yards a game. I think the Bills have found their future quarterback. You know, Buffalo's front office has done a fantastic job. I mean, in what, 2 years' time, they found a coach in Sean McDermott, they ended the team's playoff drought, and they found a franchise quarterback. You know, got to really give the Bills a lot of credit. And you guys know they're making me nervous. I got the Bills under 6 wins. I sweated out that Jets game on Sunday.
Oh, that was
guys.
Big.
That was a crucial game for that bet. I think I'm going to be okay. I think at worst now I'll push. But they're favored again this week. They're a 2.5-point favorite at home against the Lions. Buffalo Bills, I think, are one of the more overachieving teams in the NFL this year.
God, Detroit's such a bad football team.
Yeah, I mean, just look at those two franchises. Detroit, their team, it's on a downward trajectory. I think Buffalo's got a very bright future with McDermott and Josh Allen. Eventually, this Belichick-Brady thing has to end, right? I mean, it has to eventually
no,
end.
No, it will never
go on forever in perpetuity. They'll just win the AFC East. Yeah, but I think when it does finally end, I think Buffalo is positioned well. The Jets need a coach to pair with Sam Darnold, and they could be in good shape as well.
That is an interesting. That's a good story for one of our NFL players or NFL personnel. Who will take the crown next in the AFC East? You can make a case for all three. You can make a case for the Dolphins.
Yeah, the Dolphins are a team, by the way, that I always talk about how much I think they stink. And I look up and they're 7-6, and they're right there in the AFC playoff race. I don't know how that even, and that's even with losing Ryan Tannehill for what was that, 3 or 4 weeks?
Well, they had the Bachmeister.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely got to give some credit to Adam Gase, who I've never acknowledged the job he's done there, really, and he got them into the playoffs his first season 2 years ago, and he has them in the playoff race again this season, so I'll give some credit to him there. But I like Buffalo. I think Buffalo is the most well-positioned of those three AFC East teams if we assume that Brady's human and eventually he will not be good anymore.
You know, this topic has Will Cain written all over it. I'll send him a note and tell him to do that for a radio bit. Footnote, Mr.
Good,
Director.
Yeah.
By the way, the Patriots, Steelers, I like the over a lot. So this is a total square card for me, but we have those square outcomes often. And I think this is the weekend where there's just bloodbath with the favorites and over in that Steelers. I just don't see the Patriots stopping them.
Yeah, we're coming off of a weekend that was very good for the house with all those dogs covering. And we did very well. We won a very good amount, but we were talking about how great it would have been to get those dog results earlier in the year. Your handle in week 14 is nowhere near what it is in week 2, week 3. If we could have gotten those kind of results in week 2 or week 3, we really would have cleaned up. We did very well, but it could have been better, but it could lead to potentially a big favorite week for the public this week, DK.
We don't deserve dogs. That's going to be my new line.
I'm seeing some money. Like right now as we're talking, coming in on the Patriots. We just moved the Patriots to -2 here on the road at Pittsburgh. Kansas City was really the big winner last week, guys. They had the great comeback win over Baltimore, and then meanwhile, New England, Pittsburgh, and Houston all lost, putting Kansas City very much in the driver's seat in the AFC. New England and Pittsburgh both really need this game on Sunday. It should be a great game on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch it because both teams have serious flaws. So I'm excited to see which one exploits it, particularly New England's defense. Just shaky at best.
You don't think Gronk in there at safety was a good move? I said on the radio yesterday, like when he turned to run after Kenyon Drake, he looked like one of us trying to turn and go after Kenyon Drake. That was not in the most athletic moment I've seen, and he certainly should not have been out there. I mean, I know it was still a miracle play. I'm not saying that, but I think that the Patriots should have or could have handled it much better.
That's a fact. That is a fact, and it is what it is. It's the play of the year, Miami Miracle. Just what makes it so dumbfounding is the fact that it was a Patriots, a Bill Belichick team.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's perfect. Everybody makes mistakes. Some make mistakes more than others, but I think Belichick definitely deserves some of the blame for that loss. There's no doubt about that.
All right, bud, that should do it for this card. You ready to play a little bonanza?
I'm excited because I'm gonna be taking notes as you give out your picks because I told you I need to come up with something here.
All right, that sounds good. All right, baby bankroll bonanza coming up, but first a word from one of our sponsors.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Murray, honest question, are you tanking for next year? Is that what's going on?
No. I really liked the Eagles last week. I thought that was a good pick.
You could have had the Browns. You could have had the Bears.
I used the Eagles in the Golden Nugget contest. I thought that was thought that was the right side there, got away there at the end. It looked like Dallas could have gotten a first down there and then run out the entire clock and kicked a field goal as time expired. That would have been interesting because when they always announce it at the beginning of overtime, they always say that both teams will have a chance to match if there's a field goal scored. But in that situation, Philadelphia would not have had a chance to match, and Dallas would have won on a field goal, which I think would have been interesting.
It is strange. It is strange with the time, now 10 minutes in overtime, how teams can do that now. But then again, you argue, hey, they had four quarters to win the game.
No, I know. I'm just saying they always say that at the beginning of overtime. They say, oh, if it's a field goal, the other team will have a chance to match. But that would not have been true there. If Dallas had picked up that 3rd and 8, they could have run the clock down and kicked a field goal as time expired and the game would have been over.
Murray, tough loss. I hear you talking a lot about the Eagles plus 3.5.
At gambling, the deadly sin is to mistake bad play for bad luck.
Just saying. Just saying.
Wow. Okay, that's fair.
Bob Lee, words of wisdom.
It was a tough loss. Tough, no question about that. But it was good for the book that they lost by 6 instead of 3. Although our only way to actually win on that game was we needed Philadelphia to win outright.
Gotcha. Well, all right, man. So you took an L with for a nickel, Philly, and then the Prince of Props lost his prop as well.
Yeah, the Prince of Props. I don't know. I don't know about this guy. He's leading me down a dark path here. He's got a pick for one of the Saturday games I'll give out here.
So I lost my under on the Packers game. I did win Saints, but I hedged out of it when they came back, so that was a wash because the Saints were plus money. So that was 3K both sides done. I did not play Seattle, even though I teased it, waiting for the line to come down to 3. But I did get the late 5K bet on the Giants minus 3 and just sat. That's a rocking chair game, as they say. You sit back and just wait for it because it's over.
Yeah, that one was over pretty early on. You could tell the Redskins just have nothing left. I'll be curious to see if this costs Jay Gruden his job. I don't think that it should. I don't think this is his fault, but we'll see.
So I've opened up a sizable lead. I think I'm up like 15 grand. I got to go back and do the math. I got roped into SportsCenter last night. I was planning to go back and do it all, so it cost me 8 hours of work. That was one of the things that I was going to get done. So I will go back.
I watched that SportsCenter, by the way. I watched that right after the 30 for 30. It was a good show. So I think that was your time. Yeah, because it came on. They had the 30 for 30 about Buster Douglas, and then they showed the fight, which I thought was cool.
Right.
And then it led right into SportsCenter, and I was watching that. It was good.
Yeah, it was fun. It was good. You know, love doing the show. I did it Sunday as well. It was fun to do the show, but I, you know, had to drive to work, had to prep, had to drive home, all that. So I was unable to prep 100% for the pod, but I got my square picks ready. So that's most important.
That's very important stuff, yes.
All right, first pick, Jacksonville Jaguars minus 7 for 5K.
Man.
I may play out of some of this, but.
Well, I think, I think at this point with just a few weeks left in the regular season, my only hope is just to bring in the oars here and hope that you blow your brains in. And I can come back. I mean, that's the only strategy that I see as being smart here.
I would agree. I would agree. So you're gonna take a knee, or you got to come up with something, right? Don't we have a
no? I've got the Prince. I had the Prince on the line this morning. He gave me the first score of the Cleveland Denver game will be any other score as opposed to a touchdown. He wanted to do that at plus 130 for a dime.
Wow. That's pretty random. What's the handicap?
Yeah, it's pretty random, isn't it? I have no idea. I don't know. He doesn't give me a peek behind the curtain of his process, unfortunately. Okay. But usually generally speaking here, that it's the sharper side is take the touchdown in that prop, and the any other score is more of the square bet at plus money, but we'll see. Hopefully
you better hope Denver
right
gets the ball, because I can see Denver kicking a field goal much more easily than Cleveland's got a risk taker in Baker Mayfield, a coach that goes for it a lot on two-point conversion. I mean, yeah, that's my
Did you see that throw Baker Mayfield, the touchdown pass Baker Mayfield had to Jarvis Landry?
Remarkable.
It was a ridiculous throw. Baker Mayfield is much better than I think that any of us thought he would be. Very, very impressive. If Cleveland hires the right coach, I watch out for Cleveland in the next few years.
Let's see, which game am I going to go with next? I'll take the Bengals minus 3 for a dime, 3 flat.
That's it? I mean, only a dime? I can't talk you into a little bit more here?
Well, I might play out of the Jacksonville bet some. I don't think the Redskins, let's put it this way. I don't think the Redskins are going into Jacksonville and leading wire to wire.
Okay.
That's my point.
That's
you know what, can we go 10K on Jacksonville?
10K, hey.
I'm going to play out.
Kai,
I'll allow
the moderator.
He'll allow it?
Okay. I'm good with it if Kai's good with it.
I'm going to play out of it, I think. Okay. Unless the Redskins can't get first downs again this week.
It's a risky strategy there. Risky.
Yeah, you got
Redskins
bet big
might
to win,
show
big.
Up, man.
No, they won't.
Redskins might show up, boys.
They will not. They will not.
So, and then I'll do a dime on the Bengals minus 3.
Okay, what I'm going to do this week is when I'll do the show with Brent at 3 o'clock, and I will give him a play, and then I'll tweet out what I give to Brent as my other play for the Bonanza.
Okay, what are you leaning towards? Can we help you sort it out?
I kind of like the Panthers. I like the Colts a little bit against Dallas. I think it's a tough spot for Dallas. Dallas basically wrapped up the NFC East on Sunday. They don't really have much to play for. They're not going to have a first-round bye. They're going to be either the 3 or the 4 seed, probably the 4 seed. And I really like the way the Colts are playing. So I do like Indianapolis, but I'm not totally sold yet.
That's a strong – I like that handicap. Strong to quite strong.
Quite strong, yes.
New England and Pittsburgh. Okay, go ahead.
I was going to say, I went against Dallas last week, and we saw what happened there on the tipped Amari Cooper touchdown. By the way, egg on my face, I ripped the Amari Cooper trade for Dallas to date. It's worked out extremely well for the Cowboys. So, and that first-round draft choice that the Raiders are going to get is going to be much lower than I thought it would be with Dallas making the playoffs. So,
takes a big one for the Cowboys. When you're wrong like that, I'm impressed.
You got to admit it, Kai. I mean, you can't be one of these guys that just digs in their heels every time they get something wrong. I'm wrong about the NFL a lot. So, I mean, you got to give the Cowboys credit for that. And the addition of Amari Cooper has really changed their offense.
I could argue that it was a bad trade for Dallas. And I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because he has produced on the field so much that they are going to win the division. And that means they're going to lock up Dak Prescott and Jason Garrett long term.
Well, that I agree with you on. Anything that leads to more years of Jason Garrett in Dallas is a bad thing for the Cowboys.
This is the Blake Bortles.
I don't disagree with you there. I mean, I'll say something about the Cowboys, though. I don't know who it is, but whoever's pulling the strings in their draft room is a really smart guy, because it just seems like they're unearthing studs in the draft every season. That Leighton Vander Esch guy is awesome.
Yeah. Jerry Jones deserves all the credit.
Well, maybe it is Jerry Jones. I don't know. I'm not there.
I got another play. We got a teaser, folks. What do you got? Atlanta's 8.5, right?
Yeah, 8.5. Okay. Right. 8.5 against
Cardinals. We'll tease that down to 2.5. I already gave out New England Pitt over, right?
I think I interrupted you to get another comment about the Cowboys. That was my fault.
I apologize. So New England Pitt over 52.5 for a dime as well. And you're out of plays, right?
Yeah, I'm out of plays for now. I'll tweet you guys something later this afternoon, though.
Okay, so I'll do Atlanta minus 2.5. And I'm seeing on the board that you guys have reposted Rams. Is that?
Yeah, we got the Rams minus 11.
Ooh, I'm seeing 10.5. Okay, it hasn't moved. All right, I'll do minus 5 for the L.A. Rams is my other part of the teaser.
Okay, so it's Falcons to the Rams. You say how much it was for?
I will go 2 dimes.
2 dimes. Kai, I hope you're taking notes on all this, man.
I got it. I'll diligent. Email you guys.
Yeah. I trust Kai. Kai's the impartial the media, the moderator there.
He's getting paid one way or another.
Hello.
True. True.
All right, so all right. I feel pretty good about those. I want to take Buffalo as well. But I like
Buffalo. I like Buffalo in that spot as well. I'm with you on that. I like this Buffalo team really has turned a corner so quickly, and I think they deserve a lot of credit. And I completely agree with your assessment of the Lions. And you know, we opened this game as a pick 'em on Sunday night, or minus 1 maybe it was, and money came in right away on the Bills.
And one thing we overlook a lot is these teams that are in cold weather that play in domes. Like, so we know about New Orleans outdoor because they're in a warm weather area, but let's not sleep on the Lions and let's not sleep on the Vikings being bad outdoor cold weather teams.
What would you have to be paid to go to that Lions Bills game on Sunday? Like, how much money would I would really need a large dollar figure to consider going to Buffalo and sitting outside in the cold weather and sitting through that game. That sounds awful.
So are you trying to like does that mean if for people who live there, or do I have to like come up with a dollar figure because of the commute?
You'd have to travel to Buffalo and go to the game. I mean, that would be awful.
I probably would not do it for like less than $5,000.
I can see that. That's a real window into what ESPN's paying you guys.
I mean, okay. I knew that's why I didn't want to. Well, I'll tell you what. I don't like going to a lot of NFL games. I haven't been to one.
Me neither.
Because all the games are
congregated it, if that's the right term. Then you miss all the other games on TV. That's the problem. Now, I'll go to a Monday night game. I'll go to a Sunday night game.
Earlier this year, Ed Salmon said that if you offered to pay him $10,000 cash and pay for all the expenses, he still wouldn't go to London to go to one of the NFL London games. And I said, if that's the case, this place is paying you entirely too much money. If somebody offered to fly me to London, put me in the game, and give me $10,000 cash, I would go. But the Lions-Bills game, though, that'd be a struggle. It's not going to be a very pleasant day in Buffalo, I don't think.
Well, this is something I've talked about before, and I think Brad Edwards reminded me. It's never a weather issue, Murray. It's a wardrobe issue. You can be warm at the game. It's not hard to be warm. You just have to wear the right wardrobe.
I went to a West Virginia-Pittsburgh game. It was a backyard brawl in Morgantown. I believe it was in 2005. It was on Thanksgiving night, and it was cold. It was probably the coldest I've ever been. It was brutal, man.
Were you offered 10 grand?
No, I did it for free. 2005, I wasn't the delicate genius that I am today. I was just a foolish kid.
So when Ed Salmon's complained about the potential, was he talking about how he hates flying, jet lag?
The
body clock doesn't adjust.
I think the conversation started because Jeff Sherman was talking about going to one of the games next year. I don't remember all the particulars, but Jeff was talking about going to one of the, or maybe it was this year's game, Seattle Oakland. Jeff was talking about going to one of the games in London. And that's when Ed made that comment. And I happened to be standing there. I immediately called him out. I said, no way that's true. $10,000 cash, of course he would do it. So I still don't believe you, Ed, on that.
So this is actually a column idea I was talking about with one of my bosses. I was going to do it either this week or next because there's a famous story right now in gambling circles of a poker player who's being paid $100,000.
Yeah.
To sit, sleep, and eat in a bathroom-size room. I think it is a bathroom because it has a toilet, and has to stay there for 30 days in complete darkness, and with no communication, no electronics. Just he has normal bedding, but has to just like live in a hotel bathroom size area for 30 days, and he did it because that's what happens a lot in the poker community. They do these kinds of discussions and topics, and they get people to a dollar figure.
Yeah, I don't know. $100,000 doesn't seem like enough for that.
But it's not 30. Just, I'll give you 100. It's a $100,000 bet. It's 50-50. It's not, you know, and it's,
yeah.
I mean, I would need like 10-1 odds, and I'd put up like maybe 10. But like the problem is you're,
time,
there's serious health risk there with your, you know, it's,
sure.
You know, not sleep deprivation, but there's some sort of like you may never recover. Like that's what they do to like torture people, right? Like they put them in room with no light. It's
like in the Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, it's the hole, right? Now, there's a little bit better accommodations, but just the no light for a month can really ruin your health for the permanent.
That sounds awful. I don't think 100K is enough for that.
I'll go for it.
Kai, so you would do it?
I'd do it for $1 million, Kai. I'll tell you that much.
Oh, yeah,
sure. I'd do it for $1 million.
And I believe the gentleman's father is the only one who can sort of pull the plug on it. Or the guy has the free rein to walk out, but he can probably think he's walking out after 3 days, and it could be, you know, 3 hours. I mean, who knows what goes on.
Yeah. So,
anyways, these kind of conversations happen all the time. My buddies and I used to do it. I'm sure you've done it with your friends. Kai, what would it take for you to go to a London game?
Ooh, not much, you know. Maybe just cover the flight, the accommodations, hotel, everything like that. I'll go for it.
For how much? Just the cover?
I respect that. If it was all expenses paid, you'd go.
Give me about, you know, a grand walking around money just to have a good time while I'm out there. That's all I need.
London is an expensive city there. I know that. It's an expensive place. I've been out there a couple
I'm trying
times.
To think of my dollar figure for the Bills game to be more serious. I'm trying to think of it like what it would take.
Yeah, well, I had this conversation last year because I went home for Thanksgiving. And the Redskins were playing the Giants on Thanksgiving night, and people were like selling tickets for $5 to that game. It still didn't sell out. And I said something like, "I wouldn't go to that game if you paid for my ticket and gave me $1,000." I was much happier just watching the game at home with my dad on TV. I thought that was a much better choice than going to that ridiculous game. Although the Redskins did win that game.
Yeah, well, so I would probably have to think about the Bills. I think $5,000 would get me that Buffalo. Because it's only a drive for me. It's only a drive. And it'd be cool. I would want to tailgate with Bills Mafia. I think that is an experience that it's something pretty cool pregame.
Yeah, the Bills have an awesome fan base for sure. And I think that they're about to be rewarded for their loyalty. I think the Bills are about to turn the corner.
For me, it's like I would love to go to a Monday night game. Like for me, it's just missing all the other games, like and the opportunities, financial opportunities. That would be like my biggest element of reluctance, if you will.
I could see that. I can remember that in college when West Virginia had some crap opponent on one of those noon games. I would be like, I think I'd rather just watch all the games I bet on and sit at home.
Yeah, FOMO. We've still got FOMO these days.
Yeah.
All right, Mr. Director. Should be interesting with a 10K bet on Jacksonville -7 -110. That's the big matzo ball out there. So we will continue to monitor that, and who knows what can happen. I have a few more plays between now and kickoff on Sunday.
I said earlier in the show that I probably wouldn't watch much of that Redskins-Jaguars game, but I stand corrected.
Well, this thing will be over by halftime, so you'll be okay.
I'll have my eyes on the Skins on Sunday morning, and I'll look for another play from me later today.
All right, good luck with that with Mr. Director, and feel better, my man. Feel better. We appreciate you playing hurt today.
Yeah, I'm going to go rest the golden pipes, guys, and I'll talk to you next week.
All right, that's John Murray with the Westgate Superbook.
This has been Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
All right, thanks to John Murray, Mr. Director, to you. Kai, we are going to have Mike Clay up next, and we're going to do a little speed round. We're going to make the nerd run.
Oh, yeah. Looking forward to that.
5 minutes with Mike Clay. He's going to continue to stay hot, we hope, with the prop bets. A lot of games, a lot of high-profile island games, as we like to say. So he's got a bunch of props straight ahead. But first, a word from one of our sponsors. What do you have on your holiday to-do list? How many errands do you have to run? As you know, the holidays are the busiest time of the year, especially at the post office. That's why we use Stamps.com. It saves us so much time during the hectic holiday season. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Post Office right to your desktop. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer, then the mail carrier picks it up. No trips to the post office required. It couldn't be easier. Print postage any day, anytime. Stamps.com is always open. Stamps.com not only saves you time, it saves you money. Stamps.com helps you print the right amount of postage every time. Never overpay again. And with Stamps.com, you get discounts on postage you can't even get at the post office. With all the time and money you'll save, Stamps.com is the best gift you can give yourself this holiday season. Now, I use Stamps.com because I have family members all throughout the country. My mom's in L.A. I got brothers and their children as well. So Christmas and the holidays coming up, I need to send a bunch of stuff. I don't exactly live in New York and L.A., but still, even in smaller towns like Central Connecticut, Hartford, West Hartford, there's huge lines at the post office. I was there the other day. The line was out the door because everyone else has holiday shipping to do. So I use it. You should as well. Right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in bets. That's Stamps.com. Enter bets.
Talk nerdy to me.
Fantasy insider and analyst Mike Clay back on the podcast. Another successful week, Mike, and large part to another strong performance on Thursday Night Football.
Yeah, a little bit of a roller coaster this week. We go to 10-3 now on Thursday Night Football. Then on Sunday we struggle, and then we bounce back in a big way Monday. So over 500 again.
Well, let's keep it going. High profile matchup this Thursday in the AFC West. Chargers at the Chiefs. Now, in the past, we've seen some road teams on that short week lay giant eggs. I don't think we're going to see that with the Chargers, given the magnitude of this game. And you like a high-scoring game for both teams here.
Yeah, I'm over on both point totals. I have the Chiefs at 33 and the Chargers at 27. So I'm expecting, 60 points in this game. Look at the Chargers, 2+ offensive touchdowns in every single game this season. Also, 8th and field goal attempts. So a lot of opportunities there to score points. They've done it great all season long. Chiefs defense also allowing 2+ touchdowns in all but one game this season. As for the Chiefs, I mean, they've been over 28 and 10 of 13 games. And, Doug, the only exceptions, they scored 27, 26, and 27. So an extremely high floor for this Chiefs offense, averaging over four touchdowns offensively this season. And you could score on the Chargers at times. We've seen good offenses score a lot against them. The Steelers, the Rams, and the Chiefs all scored four against them. So I think we're going to see a lot of points here on Thursday night.
It would take a very high number, very high, for me to ever bet under on a Chiefs team total. One last thing with this game. You're going to write this up for the ESPN chalk page. Keenan Allen, yes, to score a touchdown.
Yeah, if you're waking up feeling dangerous, this is the one to steal a line from Baker Mayfield. This is the route to go here. Yeah, even money for Allen to find the end zone. He's done so in five straight games and, you know, six end zone targets during that span. That's most in the NFL. So he's getting work near the goal line, and the Chiefs allowing a lot of touchdowns. The Chargers, as mentioned, scoring a lot of touchdowns. There's going to be plenty of opportunity here.
All right, Saturday. We got a treat on Saturday NFL action as we're in that December stretch where we really have to juggle family time and TV time. But you a couple bets in this Denver-Cleveland game.
Yeah, I'm going to go. And in both of these, they're plus 115. That's why I'm interested in them, because they're touchdown related. So Nick Chubb, I'm going to say no touchdown again, just because it's plus 115. And there's some reasons behind that, too. Eight games is the lead back. He has eight touchdowns, but only seven carries inside the five. So he's a little bit over his head in the touchdown department. And by the way, the Broncos last allowed a rushing touchdown in week six. That's seven straight without allowing a rushing touchdown.
Seven straight games without allowing a rushing touchdown.
Yeah, so that's probably good news, or not good news, I should say, for Nick Chubb in this one. And then Case Keenum, I have him over 1.5 passing touchdowns. They have, Denver has scored 48% of their touchdowns through the air this season. That is second lowest, right? But if you look at their play calling closer, it says it should be closer to 64%, you know, based on how often they're throwing it near the goal line.
Right.
So that number is a little misleading. Also, the Browns have allowed 2+ passing touchdowns in 7 of 13 games this season. So, and by the way, they've given up a lot while on the road as well. A lot of passing touchdowns are, of course, in Denver for this one. So I'm going to go over on Keenum here.
All right, and plus 115 at last check, so you get a little bit of extra juice there. Rams and Eagles on Sunday night. We're not sure what's going to be the official status with Carson Wentz. And that factors into this prop, I imagine.
Yeah, no question. When I wrote this up, it was with Wentz in there. So I think I like it even a little bit more with Nick Foles in the pocket for Philadelphia. Combined sacks over 5 is plus 120. My projection, again, with Wentz in there, was at 5.7. Both defenses are tied for 14th in sacks. Wentz's sack rate was up a lot from last season. Obviously, that offensive line has dealt with Jason Peters being a little beat up, a little bit of a rotation at guard. And Goff's is actually up slightly from last year as well. We know both teams have two good pass rushes, I think. And this is the first one we've done with sacks all season. So this is the finally one that stood out.
Nice. I like that. Dipping your toe into the sack category.
Oh, yeah.
Monday night, Saints haven't exactly been themselves. Woke up in the second half last week with their offense, and you're going team total over here. But Breeze under. Explain that.
Yeah, I like the Saints to score points, but maybe not do a lot through the air in this one. The Saints have been slumping the past two games, but they still hit 28 points last week, and the line here is 29 for them. The point total for the Saints is 29. So this is a great offense. They're averaging four touchdowns a game and 31 per game on the road. So that's over this mark, too. They're playing at Carolina. Panthers defense allowing three touchdowns in three straight games and at least three touchdowns in 9 of 13. So a lot to like in terms of scoring for the Saints offense. As for Breeze, the line here, 259.5 in terms of passing yards. He's been under in 7 games this season, including 3 straight under that line, of course. His last 3 yardage totals, 201, 127, 171. This is a very run-heavy Saints offense, the second run-heaviest in the NFL, and they should be able to run on this Panthers defense. So I'm going to lean under on this one.
All right, man. So under 259.5, over 29 points for the Saints on Monday Night Football. Good stuff as always, my man. Let's keep it up. Keep it rolling, especially on those Thursday nights. I like how you went with 3 picks, because Thursday stuff is good for you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I got to go heavy on the ones you're winning, right?
All right, bud. Have a good weekend.
Anytime. Thanks a lot.
Talk nerdy to me.
That was Speed Round with Mike Clay. We make the nerds run in PE class here on the Behind the Bets podcast. As Mike alluded to, his post for Thursday night is on the ESPN.com chalk page, where he breaks down his prop for the Thursday night game. Phil Steele will join us momentarily and give us his picks for this Saturday as the bowling season gets underway. But first, a word from one of our sponsors. Holidays are near, gentlemen. Treat yourself or a loved one to a brand new suit. Indochino is expanding into casual clothing with made-to-measure chinos. Indochino is North America's leading made-to-measure menswear company.
They make suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. Guys love the option to personalize the details, including your lapel, lining, pockets, buttons, and writing your own monogram. Here's how it works. Visit a stylist at a showroom and have them take your measurements personally or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric inside and out. Choose your design customizations. Submit your measurements with your choices. Relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in a couple of weeks. Just watch as the compliments roll in. 2018's lowest prices, up to 70% off everything. The theme is all about stepping out from backstage. Make an entrance. Take center stage. Your biggest moment, grand finale, etc. This week, listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering Behind the Bets at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code Behind the Bets for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. Incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit.
Stop. Hammer time.
He's back on the podcast after a one-week hiatus. Phil, I still gave you a shout-out, and you delivered again, Army-Navy under, for the 13th straight year.
It's almost an automatic, Doug. Just all the stuff that sets up in that game, and it comes true to form every year. And it's just it's like having money in the bank.
You know, it's a good handicap because the power ratings, which determine the over-unders, are computed based on that particular season. However, the trends and the reasons you articulated beautifully is that they're familiar with each other, all that stuff that we talked about in the pod last week, we meaning I did, and that doesn't hold true. It's just a perfect sort of counter to the power ratings, basically.
Yeah, and plus the extra time to prepare for the option. It takes away the main thing that the option's advantage is you have 1 week to prepare for it and you never face it. Those two things are not enforced for that game. And plus, it's a rivalry game. Generally, rivalry games, teams play a little bit closer, tighter, you know, because it's so important.
That's why I like the first half in particular. That was my official pick on SportsCenter. And we saw it open up in the second half, right? Now, it didn't matter for the game under a 40, but yeah. That was my thought process. I think, like, to your point, coaches are more conservative, players are tighter. I just think if I like an under, I usually go first half under in football.
And 28-12 for Douglas on the year. Is that correct?
Yes, 28-12, a solid 70%. I should pull a Costanza and just leave early. That's it. I'm out. Yeah. I'm out.
Time to retire, Doug. Just rest on your laurels.
Yeah, put that in ink on the bullet on the resume bullet point, and then never try to pick another college football game. But that's why you're here. You're picking the games. Although I do love some stuff early, but let's get into it because we're going to tape this portion today. Obviously, this is Wednesday, December 12th, and then we're going to tape next week. Early in the week or midweek, we haven't quite finalized it, but you're looking at Tuesday or Wednesday taping. So let's just get through that bowl bonanza to start early. And we got a slate of games. Everyone's been itching to play. And we have some teams we're not really completely familiar with. And I guess overarching a macro question going in, you hear about players that are going to sit out. You hear about coaches on the move. Now, obviously, a lot of this news already surfaced, but what kind of concern do you have in terms of playing any of these games early?
I would say mild concerns, but not major, because you figure if you're a player that's going to sit out, you're probably a top 10 to top 20 guy for the draft, unlike Will Greer, who opted to sit out. But you're usually one of the top guys, and those guys usually have let you know in advance what they're going to do, like an Ed Oliver of Houston sitting out. As far as the coaching things goes, it seems like most of the coaching changes have been made. It would concern me if a coach left, but at least at this point, if a coach left at this late period of time, he'd have done most of the pregame preparation for the game, which is what you really need the head coach for anyway. So I would put the concern level at moderate to low.
Right, but you got to scope that injury news. We saw significant line movement with the Syracuse-West Virginia game because of the Will Greer news you mentioned. Late, is it last night, I believe, that Georgia Tech's opponent,
Minnesota announced that 7, 8, or 9 players would be ineligible for the bowl game. That line moved from 4 to 6 in favor of Georgia Tech. Compound that with the fact that it's Paul Johnson's last game, maybe the emotional edge there. So there's news breaking all the time with this stuff.
Yeah, and the suspensions are the big thing,
because right.
A lot of times they come in waves. I guess, you know, it's when it happens and it's 5 or 6 guys getting suspended, major concern. If it's one guy getting suspended, you know, they're a football team. They got 22 players that are on the field, and, you know, one guy can be overcome. But usually when it's 5 or 6, that's a pretty tough blow.
And it's, but it's also indicative of sort of the mindset of the entire team. Even if it's like, let's say, 4 guys, it's sort of reflective that, because it is a balancing act for teams to balance the, you know, business part of the trip, which is playing a football game, but the pleasure as well, because it's an experience that they'll get to take with them for the rest of their lives, especially if it's a unique city. Like when I covered the Las Vegas Bowl, Arizona State fell down to Boise by like 25-0 or something insane. It was the Brock Osweiler was playing with the Sun Devils. But that week, the guys at ASU were seen all around town past curfew. So even if it's just a few guys missing, it's just representative of just exactly how the whole team is sort of treating the week.
Yeah, that is true. And it's when you get out in an environment like that, you know, let's say in New Orleans or Las Vegas, those things can happen.
All right, let's start this Saturday. You have the Las Vegas Bowl, ASU and FSU, and you like Herm Edwards. Herm's not going to let his guys get wacky in Vegas. They're all business, aren't they?
Yeah, you would think so. You would think Herm Edwards would have some curfews and things like that. Now, you know, the one major blow, I think, for Arizona State was N'Keal Harry, their wide receiver. Definitely their top wide receiver threat, perhaps the top wide receiver for the NFL next year. Also, one of their top return men. He is going to miss the game. So that's an unfortunate blow for Arizona State, which had a trio of players coming in. But I still think they've got good talent. When you look at Fresno, their defense is just outstanding, allowing 324 yards per game this year. But keep in mind, they have faced a lot lighter schedule. You know, on the course of the season, they've only taken on one Power 5 team. Meanwhile, Arizona State's playing a Power 5 team on a weekly basis. In fact, they played 6 Power 5 teams that made it to bowl games this year. So their numbers may not be as good as Fresno State. Fresno's plus 97 yards per game on the year. Arizona State plus 25, but you do have to factor in the competition. I also look at a couple other things. First of all, I give Arizona State the edge at running back with Eno Benjamin. This guy's dynamic. He's 1,524 yards this year, 15 touchdowns. I like the offensive line as well. In fact, I'm on the Joe Moore Award Committee for the top offensive line in the country, and Arizona State was one of the 10 semifinalists for that. So it tells you the respect that the Arizona State offensive line gets. So overall with that, and Manny Wilkins, a dangerous runner and passer, I give the edge on offense to Arizona State. Defensively, as mentioned, Fresno's got much better numbers. I still think they're a better defense, even though Arizona State's taking on tougher competition. I like their secondary and the linebacking core. And, you know, Jeff Tedford's been to bowl games before. This guy's 6-3 as a head coach in bowls. It's Herm Edwards' first bowl game. This guy was an NFL head coach. But I think if you take the schedule and then add it all up, these teams fairly close. But how about a Pac-12 team being an underdog to a Mountain West team? I think that's going to have Arizona State motivated, where sometimes when you get Pac-12 against Mountain West and the Pac-12 is a big favorite, it's the Mountain West team that's motivated. But I think the motivation here goes on Arizona State. Herm Edwards, you look at their losses this year, they've been by 7, 7, 7, 1, and 2 points. So almost all their games are tight. I like the talent level. I like the motivation. I'm going with Arizona State plus the 4 or 4.5 in this one.
Can't argue with that, especially because maybe Fresno State had higher aspirations going into that Boise game, even during the regular season, and then, of course, the conference title game. I just wonder, like you said, it's ASU that's the underdog in this spot.
Yeah, and they're going to know it coming in. And all the talk is going to be, you know, Fresno's going to win the game. And you look at the Bowl Confidence Contest, which is a great contest on ESPN each year. And fans are voting in Fresno to win the game. And so there's a lack of respect, I think, for the Pac-12 school here.
You like another underdog, and that's Middle Tennessee State plus 7. You know, App State began the year with a near upset of Penn State. And many thought it was like, oh, fluke, Penn State just kind of looking past its inferior opponent. But then App State went on to win nearly every game the rest of the way. a legit App State squad, and you're taking the Middle Tennessee State here plus the full seven.
Yeah, and when you look at this matchup, first of all, Jalen Moore, the top running back for App State, went out, and believe it or not, they really didn't miss a beat. They did extremely well, even with him out of this game as the backup running back, which is Darrington Evans, is a guy that rushed for 1,079 yards. He actually averaged 6.5 yards per carry. Zach Thomas just 5.7. So no problem there with Zach Thomas, who got injured midseason, as Evans has done quite well. I like App State's defense as well. They're holding opponents to 107 yards per game, below their season average. That is number 8 in the country this year. So this is a good App State team, one that was clearly the best in the Sun Belt all year long, and they've got the offense and the defense. But this Middle's a dangerous squad. And keep in mind, Middle has faced 3 SEC teams this year. They played Vanderbilt. They played Georgia. They played Kentucky. So they played the much tougher schedule during the course of the season. Their defense isn't bad. They're allowing 4.2 yards per carry, but overall a good defense. I like their defensive line. In fact, I rate the defensive lines between the two teams as even. Quarterback edge, I got to go with Middle Tennessee. Brett Stockstill is playing his final game. Seems like he's been at Middle for 10 years. It's actually, I believe it's his fourth. He's hit 71% of his passes, a 28-8 ratio, a pinpoint passer, and the short passing game should negate whatever pass rush App State puts up. But here's the thing, App State only 22 sacks on the year. They're not a big pressure team. So I think Stockstill will have time in the pocket to be able to hit his receivers like Ty Lee and Patrick Smith, and that's going to keep Middle going. So overall, Middle's got a good defense, holding opponents 34 yards per game below their season average. They're the underdog. And then my main factor is Scott Satterfield. I think Scott Satterfield, one of the better young coaches out there. He just took the Louisville job. He's gone. So you've got an interim head coach trying to prep App State for this game. You've got the veteran, Rick Stockstill, coaching the Middle Tennessee State team. They're an underdog by a full touchdown. And I think Brent Stockstill, at the worst, gives them backdoor potential. But I think they have the potential to win this game outright.
It's important to get these picks, Phil. We need them. We've been so thirsty for college football for a week plus. You know, some people dip their toe in the FCS action a little bit, but it's good to get these that slate of bowl games on Saturday, that monster slate to kick off the bowl season.
Yeah, absolutely. 39 bowl games. We start out with 5 of them are on Saturday, and also, you got that FCS game, which is important to the Bowl Confidence Contest. Do you play in the Bowl Confidence Contest this year, Doug?
I haven't participated. No, it's been a while. I always overthink these things. Shockingly, that's who I am. Paralysis by analysis. But I always wonder. It's like the I actually had a free roll in the Superbook Super Contest in Vegas, and I just didn't do it because you post a stupid record. Like, picking 39 bowl games is difficult, right? Like, it's it's very tough. So if you do poorly, then people start to come after you, but I don't want to hear the chirping, because I don't think it's indicative of gambling, and I'll tell you why. There's a reason with John Murray I do the Baby Bankroll Bonanza with an actual bankroll, because when you bet games, you don't bet the same amount of money on every single game. So the win-loss record does treat every pick equally. Now, there's confidence picks in a lot of pools. I get all that. But I just think it's a misrepresentation of what it doesn't simulate actual gambling.
Well, I do have. I've got my own Bowl Confidence Contest on ESPN. I'd like you to join there, buddy. Just go to my Twitter account, at PhilSteele042, click on the Bowl Confidence Contest, and you rank them 39-1. So you got ones you're unsure of, throw them down there at 1. I'd like to take you on in that, see who finishes.
And
better.
Is it with the point spread?
It does not involve the points, who's going to win the game outright. So, the Alabama, Oklahoma, you don't have to worry about the spread. Who are you picking?
I'll take the Tide. My favorite bet of the bowl season so far is Tide team total over.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean,
I think Alabama, I'm assuming Tua's ankle, but look, you're looking at 47-ish for a team total. I think Bama gets there pretty easily, because I think Oklahoma can put up some points. I think they're going to run tempo. Alabama's not going to all of a sudden slow it down. I think Alabama putting up 50 is pretty safe bet.
Yeah, and the good thing with that is, even if you get to the third quarter, and let's say Bama for some reason is up 38-7, let's say it's that type of game, they're not going to put their offense away, because Oklahoma is so explosive. look at that Texas game, and I'm sure Coach Saban will impress upon them. They were down by 21 points in the fourth quarter, and Oklahoma scored like three touchdowns in 5 minutes, and all of a sudden the game was tied. So Alabama will not relax if up big in the third quarter. I think they'll keep trying to score, knowing how potent Oklahoma is. And I don't think – one of the tougher beats I had this year, Doug, was Alabama and Ole Miss over the
total. I had that in the column. That was
49-7 at the half. You're like, this is easy. And the whole second half, Mississippi's just running the clock down to 1 second and snapping it. Alabama's running the ball down to 1 clock and snapping it. And you're just like, oh, my God, this thing is not going to go over. We are only going to score 13 points in the entire second half, and it just goes under the total. So I don't think that's going to happen here because Oklahoma, first of all, it's a playoff game, and I don't think that Oklahoma is going to be like, you know, let's just not get embarrassed here. Oklahoma is going to go down swinging, and that's going to make Alabama keep scoring.
But see, you're giving more credit to Oklahoma's D than I would. Even if Alabama's taking its foot off the gas, they're not going to stop Bama. Like, that, I don't think people realize how bad the defense was at times in the Big 12. That West Virginia-Oklahoma game was pathetic at times. Dudes running wide open. Now, it's one reason why I think Tua should have won the Heisman, but I certainly couldn't fault anyone for voting for Kyler Murray. But dudes are running wide open.
Yeah, they were. And, also, the main thing about Oklahoma is a lack of serious pass rushers up front of that defensive front seven. They only had, on the season, 28 sacks. Most of them, I think, they had to come up with extra pressure, you know, deal an extra linebacker in there. They really don't have any serious pass rushers. And that's, and against Alabama's offensive line, Tua and those receivers, you got to think Alabama is going to come in wanting to run the football, but I think they'll do extremely well throwing it as well. So I'm dying to see which way Oklahoma could possibly stop them.
Yeah, I don't see how Alabama doesn't hang 50 on there. I think it's going to be 60-plus. So that's my favorite bet. The team total, you know what it is. You know what it is, Phil.
Stop.
Yeah.
Hammer time.
There you go, Doug. There you go.
So that's the one that jumps out to me so far in the bowl season. Because I just like the team total when you can isolate. It's funny you bring up that Ole Miss-Alabama game, Phil, because in my column on Friday, I put the over. That was one of my picks. And then I got Friday night, Saturday, I was like, you know what? Why not just do team total? So I gave out a team total for a regular season game as one of my picks, and it got there by halftime.
Yeah, there you go. And, you know, Ole Miss scored a touchdown on the first play of the game.
Right, right. First, 7-0.
And you're like, this is so easy. It's ridiculous. Ole Miss is going to score. Bama's going to score. We're going over the total. And what did it go under by, like a point and a half?
Yeah, something like that. That's when we realized the first half Alabama was the gravy train that we all needed to jump on. Any early line moves you anticipate the rest of the way? Like we mentioned last night with the Georgia Tech, we saw that line move go from 4 to 6 because we know what happens. A lot of these times, these isolated games, these New Year's 5, New Year's 6 bowls, they really steam the day of the game because it's the only game on TV that Tuesday, Wednesday night, whatever it is. Any sort of line moves you're anticipating?
I'm thinking when you look at Clemson and Notre Dame, most of the stuff I hear is Clemson, Clemson, Clemson. I think Clemson's going to be at the top of everybody's bowl confidence contest, if not 1, 2, or 3 at the very top. And the line's 11.5. And the reason I bring that up here is if you're not crossing a major number, if you're not crossing a 3, 7, 10, or 14, that line can move very easy. Because in the bettor's mind, what's the difference between 11.5, 12.5, and 13? There really is no difference, correct? So if the money's coming in on Clemson, the Vegas is more prone to move an 11.5 up to a 13 or a 13.5 than they would be to take a 6.5 and move it to a 7.5 because they're opening themselves up to middle. So I think line move-wise, 11.5 is a number that can easily move in a game.
I agree with you. My only counterpoint is two things. One is I think there's going to be some Notre Dame public money on there just because of the Notre Dame's fan base and the money line component. But a person I really trust, a really sharp guy, he thinks Notre Dame has a chance to win outright. He loves the points. And I was shocked because I think Clemson is an absolute beast. And we've said it on the podcast before with others, is that this is a national championship contender that is totally getting overlooked. They're like the Cleveland Cavaliers of a couple years ago that got boat raced in the finals, even though they had Kyrie Irving and LeBron.
That was something. I agree with that. I actually agree with your buddy. I'm sort of leaning a little bit towards Notre Dame in that game. I'm just talking about the potential for a line move. Is there?
What I was saying is the sharps might keep it down. That's my only thing. That's what I was saying. Like, if he's on it, then a lot of sharps aren't, like yourself. He thought the ACC is really down this year and that Clemson has really struggled in some big, you know, some against its toughest opponents like BC, that maybe they're not all that. Just saying. That's, you know, one person's perspective.
I'm going to throw out something that I was thinking about, because I have to tell you what, the Pac-12, their record last year only winning one bowl game, they are getting maligned everywhere. And people are just automatically saying, I'm going against the Pac-12 team. I'm going against the Pac-12 team. It wouldn't surprise me this year if the Pac-12 actually had a winning record. You look at their matchups, they're favored in a good number of them. And I think you're going to see the Pac-12 fare better. And I believe the spreads will be slanted against the Pac-12 just because everybody knows what the Pac-12's record was last year.
All right, so maybe some value on the Pac-12. All right, buddy. Good stuff. Thank you, as always, Mr. Steele. And happy bowl season to you.
Yeah, it's kicking off this week, so that's all good, Doug, and I can't wait to talk to you again next week, my friend. I'm sure we'll be texting over the weekend.
You got it, bud, and I'll let you know what my picks are this Saturday.
All right, sounds good.
Let's get her done.
Good luck to you, buddy.
Thank you. Take care. Good to have Phil Steele back on the pod after his 1 week off, although he, by proxy, gave me that winning pick with the Army-Navy under. Remarkable, 13 straight years, so also his plays for this coming Saturday in the bowl games. Mike Clay with his prop bets, and thanks to John Murray, sore throat and all, joining us, Mr. Director, as we have coming down the home stretch here with the Bonanza. We'll have the playoffs, obviously, with Mr. Murray. But, Kai, any confessions of a non-gambler?
No confessions of a non-gambler.
None at all. We've fully corrupted you. You are a full degenerate now. You have no questions.
No questions, but I do have a statement.
Okay.
And I'm not one to brag, but my confessions of a non-gambler pick of the week,
if you will,
I told the world that Kyler Murray would win the Heisman, and he indeed did. So if you guys want to get some analysis from somebody that has really no fact behind it, just picking it out the sky, you need to listen to me.
I mean, let's keep in mind, he was a favorite when you tweeted that, right? Like you said, you went on Twitter saying you heard it here for, like, he was a betting favorite.
He was.
This wasn't exactly the same as your Rutgers money line prediction here.
Let's not forget about that one.
Yeah.
That was another one.
See how I weave that one in?
So at some point, I'll get another one out there, and I'll be 3 for 3, and then it'll be solidified.
3 for 3? Oh, because now you're taking the points with Rutgers. Before, it was money line.
Yeah.
Going into the weekend, it was Rutgers money line.
No. I don't remember that part. Okay. I just remember the points.
All right. I'm going to call BS on that one. All right, so no confessions. We were pretty clean there?
Pretty clean.
All right. So good to know that you are on the dark side. We've embraced you over here, and you're seamless now. You can just start touting plays now.
Ready for my ritual.
Okay, so that does it for this pod. Next week we will have two because the bowl season will be picking up. Thanks to everyone for downloading. I know this is a little bit longer podcast. We combined the two. Appreciate everyone's loyal listening, subscribing, downloading, rating, and reviewing, all good stuff. Safe holiday travels this week, and if you are, safe holiday shopping. We'll get back with you next week with two separate podcasts.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.